don't you just accept your fate and join us, Ashley? Join us! Don't you wanna join the crew? You'll be dead and evil too. The coolest thing to do is join us, huh? Your life sucks, you know. Working ass marks gotta blow. Don't be just a fucking schmo and join us. You'll be dead with no remorse and be hung like a horse. You can even bang a corpse if you join us. Imagine all the fun if to evil you succumb. So just lay down that big gun and join our dark army of evil Kandarian demons as we conquer this land and tangle our reach in every soul of the living.
No! 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 I'm not gonna join you! Never!
What's the problem, Ash? You don't want to look beautiful? Like me?
What was that from?
That's Evil Dead. The musical. Oh, okay. You've never heard of Evil Dead the musical?
No.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 429, recorded on June 27th, 2016. Welcome to the 429th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 262nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am John Fowle.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So this is our first post-E3 podcast, and we still have a contest going on. Only one person's responded so far, but we should get more. There's a lot of crap in there. Scott there received a sampling of what's in that loot crate.
Yeah, way to sell it by calling it crap.
It's a lot of crap in there. But the crap that Scott did what I send you, Scott, is that crap?
No, it's awesome. I loved it.
So describe what I sent you for one.
Well, you sent me the pin that you tweeted.
Let me ask you a question. Are you putting on a lapel or? Because it's a lapel pin.
Maybe on a tie or something.
Here's the thing. By the way, folks, it's not a pin as in a button. It's a lapel pin, and you've seen that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the logo for Tyranny.
Mm-hmm. And you also sent me a little journal for it. It had Civilization VI emblazoned on it with a little compass on there, also a pen that also said Civilization VI, which I thought was awesome. And video games have not given these out in a long, long time. It's the last time I got something like this was from Myst, so you could write in your journal about your exploring the game. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And thank you for sending it.
I also sent you three of the show guides from E3, day one, day two, day three, so at least you get an idea of what was going on there. And I usually grab a bunch of those and send them out to people in the contest, just so they can feel like they were at E3. You know, because what they do is they encapsulate everything that happened in the conferences each day. So it's sort of like you get to see, and they're printed on the very same days.
A little bit of history, yeah.
Yeah. I sent out a T-shirt to Alan Roosh, who is the son of a former podcast host. And basically it's from the PC Gaming Show, and it has a WASD in front of it, you know, WASD keys. And basically I wrote that, I couldn't get him an Overwatch T-shirt, but here's a way to prove you're part of the PC Master Gaming race with this T-shirt. So,
Very good.
That T-shirt, by the way, is one of the things that's included in the loot, as well as an actual loot crate.
See, that's a better name for it, loot instead of crap.
Yeah, definitely.
Loot crap. Anyways, I also included some other stuff in there, including the Civ 6 journal and pen. By the way, the pen looks really, really, really nice.
It is nice.
Yeah.
It is.
There's other stuff in there, too, not the least of which is an NBA 2K17 code. It's a golden Kobe Bryant coin with a code for NBA 2K16. And a lot of people are interested in that, and they were asking me on Twitter if they could get it, and I said, well, just enter the contest. And they haven't entered the contest. So if you want that coin and that code, you have to enter the contest. I'm not giving away the code for free, if that's what you want. So you got to earn that code. So before we move on to the game news, we did the podcast in the middle of E3. I never really got to discuss what happened at the latter end of it. Most of the games I saw, but I also looked at some hardware, and one of the hardware things I looked at was PDP. And for those of you who don't know, they're the ones who make those glowy controllers and headsets. And I'm going to tell you something. The controllers are really, really sturdy, and they're also inexpensive. I get the Rock Candy, which is the colored controllers, right? And they're pretty nice colors, but they're inexpensive and they last a long time.
Are they better than Mad Cats?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. And you know, the Afterglow stuff is really neat. And they showed me one of the Afterglow keyboards, and you can get an Xbox One app or a PS4 app or whatever you're getting it for, and actually control your controller. You know, you see a color wheel, for instance, you know, with all the gradations, and wherever you move it, the controller turns that color, and you can pre-program all the colors and stuff in it, you know. Which I think is really, I usually just cycle the colors, so it just goes between different colors.
I feel like if you're going to use a keyboard for Xbox or PlayStation, you might as well just get a computer.
No, the keyboard is for PC. I'm talking about the controller. The controller comes with an app. They also have Rock Band, guitars as well. That's specially made by PDP. They're not glowy like most of their stuff, but they're I'm trying to remember what the name of the I don't think it's a Fender, is it? But they are, by the way, is it a Fender? Oh God, they're going to kill me for not remembering. Oh, it's a Fender bass, right. It's a Fender, not a Stratocaster. And it's a special one that only they're making. So that's nice. But like I said, I always go after the controllers because A, the controllers are pretty, and B, they are durable. The 360 Rock Candy that I have, that's blue, is 6 years old, and it works perfectly. Unlike the official Microsoft controllers for the Xbox One, which are a little bit fragile at the analog sticks, for whatever reason they just keep inching forward. But my Rock Candy PDP controllers not only are inexpensive, but they last a very long time. So I'm probably going to pick one up, a Rock Candy controller for the Xbox One. Yeah. Even if the Xbox One S controller is good, I'm still going to get the extra controller, you know, and it's probably going to be I don't want to say the price because I have no idea, you know, like $29.99 or $39.99, you know, less expensive than the actual controllers. So, I mean, they make it for everybody, by the way. They also make it for PS3, PS4, Wii U, and all that stuff. I mean, they have special colored Wii U controllers, if I remember correctly. Wiimotes.
Are they good?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Wiimotes. Not the Wii U motes. There aren't Wii U. Jeez. You know, I gotta look this stuff up because, you know, I was really impressed with what they had. And, they do fight pads for Mario Controller. Oh, they look nice. Oh, yeah, the PDP fight pad looks really, really nice. Just look it up on, and it also comes with multiple colors. Look it up on Amazon, PDP Wii U controllers, and you'll see some really nice ones. They have a Yoshi one. That's not what I saw at E3, though. But they make it for everybody. And like I said, PDP really makes some sturdy stuff. And that's the main reason why I go price and sturdiness. You know, I'm not the sort of person who will orgasm at, you know, a fancy controller unless it lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you seem to really like that Jonah-sized controller.
Oh, yeah. They had a gigantic Afterglow controller that I snapped photos of. The thumbstick was bigger than my hand, much bigger than my hand. That gives you an idea of the scale of the thing. I don't think it actually worked, but it was funny as hell. And it also cycled its colors too. So yeah,
it was very cool looking.
Yeah, I also got to sample the HTC Vive. They had a thing outside, so you didn't even need to be at E3 in order to check it out. And I'm telling you something, you know, the Vive blows the Oculus right out of the water. It just, because the Oculus, you know, it's okay, but the Vive does two things. It does, not only does it do virtual reality, but it also adds a special layer of augmented reality. And the combination of the two just blow you away. It's like, whoa. You know? Mm-hmm. But you have to have the software to use it. Now, from what I understand, the Xbox, the Scorpio is going to be able to handle the Vive. So that'll be interesting. You know, it'll be able to handle the Oculus and the Vive. That's what Microsoft is promising. Of course, the HTC Vive also costs $800, so it's about the price of an expensive smartphone.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, someone should do those smartphone deals with these Vive controllers. Seriously. You know, and allow people to finance them. So, anyways, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've actually been playing some new games. I got Dishonored for $5 off a Steam sale. Huh? So I was actually playing that, and it is really hard to be stealthy.
Wait a minute. I thought you already played Dishonored. Oh, that's TJ who's played Dishonored.
Yeah, TJ.
Scott. Okay, so Scott is joining the ranks of the Dishonored to see what it's like. So it's a little more action-y than Thief, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, because in Thief, you really can't fight at all.
No.
They really punish you if you blow your cover and pretty much kill you right away. In this game, you can actually kill people if you blow your cover, and it's, I guess, if you get more powers later on, you can just go and kill everybody anyways, not even bother being stealthy. Yeah. But it is interesting. I'm trying to be stealthy, but I'm not very used to that kind of gameplay. I've been playing too much Skyrim, where I'm just this tank and I run over people.
Well, you can do that. Just keep in mind, there's going to be more rats.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it easy to be stealthy in Dishonored. The problem was that I don't know where the triggers are for people saying that, you know, because there are certain things, like in one thing you say, keep my father safe. And no matter what, I couldn't keep him safe. And I said, screw it. Okay, everybody dies, including the father. And I'm going to be the one who killed him. And then I'm going to tell her I killed him because I couldn't have any witnesses, not even her father. So screw you. I've been mentally broken by the death of the Empress, and now I'm just a murder machine monster. Leave no witnesses. So, how far have you gotten in Dishonored?
Not very far. I haven't escaped the prison yet.
Oh, okay.
But I've also been playing this Diablo clone, which is called Grim Dawn.
Oh.
It's a real nice graphic game. And you're this guy that was about to be hung because you were possessed by a demon, and the demon escaped just as you're being hung. And so now you're kind of out for revenge to take down all the demons and undead.
Yeah, this is not a new game. This has been around for 2 years maybe.
Well, I mean, new for me.
I mean, I always thought it was, you know, I keep on calling it Grim Dark because that's what it is. It's Grim Dawn,
very,
I know.
Very, yes.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a nice little Diablo clone. I still haven't gone far. Oh, by the way, I found my authenticator. So now I can play Diablo 3 again.
Yay.
I wasn't really that desperate to play Diablo 3. Like I said, it lost me, and it didn't get me back again. It never had that same magic as Diablo 2. So, TJ, what have you been playing?
Well, Jonah.
Uh-oh. Well, Jonah. I've been playing the world, and I beat it.
I recently took on the disaster piece known as Resident Evil. No, it's not even Resident Evil, it's just Umbrella Corps.
Oh, okay.
They took the Resident Evil title off of it, for probably very good reason.
Only multiplayer-only one?
Yes, this one is multiplayer. Well, it's mainly multiplayer mostly.
Yeah.
There's some offline modes in it, and what I would like, they call it the experiment, but what I would describe it as is training and then more training.
Have you noticed, by the way, they're going backwards on the remasters? They remastered Resident Evil 6, which people thought was crap. Then they remastered Resident Evil 5. And I'm talking about release, and it was okay. You know, there's a controversy about it being set in Africa, but it was okay. And the last one that's coming out that's being remastered is Resident Evil 4, which everybody thinks is the pinnacle of the series. So they're being smart. They're doing 6, 5, 4 in reverse order, because they know if they go 4, 5, 6, no one's going to buy 5 and no one's going to buy 6.
Well, that, and they have to save 2 for last, because that's the one that everybody wants.
I don't think they're doing 2. They're just doing 6, 4, 5, 4.
They're getting ready to get 2 ready. Like, they're redoing the city and everything.
Did they remaster 0? I could have sworn they did. Yeah. So you've been playing Resident Evil crap version. Got it.
It's not Resident Evil. It's just Umbrella Corps.
Yeah, very important. Yeah, and Prometheus is an alien.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for the fact that the next Prometheus game is Prometheus movie is going to be called Alien.
But yeah, it's I'm hesitant to say that I've ever played a game where the concept and the mechanics just worked against themselves so much.
I can identify because I've been playing The Crew.
Okay, let me put it this way. The idea behind Umbrella Corps is that you're a soldier trying to make headway with the Umbrella Corporation. And what that amounts to... By the way, this takes place after Resident Evil 6, so the Umbrella Corporation's been dealt several blows.
Right.
And apparently what that amounts to is Umbrella Corps has its soldiers fight each other to the death in Coliseum-like events. And that's how they build their ranks. By having them kill each other. Hmm. On a regular basis.
Which makes me wonder what Resident Evil 7 Biohazard's gonna be.
Completely different. Because, for one, it's something that you play by yourself, and for two, it's not a freaking milquetoast shooter that tries to be everything and is absolutely nothing good. It's hot garbage. It's the first game that I've ever given anything below a 5-2 in review. This one got a 2.
Okay. I reviewed SimCity Streets of SimCity. No, Streets of SimCity I reviewed. So, yeah. For those who don't know what Streets of SimCity was, it was a blown concept in which you import your SimCity, and you turn, basically you're in a car, and it's sort of like Grand Theft Auto, in which you're actually driving through your SimCity, and there could have been so many ways of awesome, but it just failed.
Yeah.
So, I played The Crew, because it's free on... It was a free Xbox Gold game. And it sucks. And it shouldn't suck, because it actually takes the entire United States. Now, of course, it's scaled down a bit, you know, but it still is, you know... But there's more grinding in this than I've ever had in any JRPG, number one. I really appreciate the rewind in Forza now, in a big way. Because the cars you get, you drive like you're drunk. Just the slightest little nudge, and it goes careening in another direction. It's all wrong, and it could have been good. Since it's an Ubisoft game, it kept on telling me about these events that I could only play if I buy the expansion for $25. And then there are cars you can buy from Marketplace, which are uber special. And it's just, you know, it's just so cheesy and bad, which makes me really want to play Forza Motorsport 3. Mm-hmm. Forza Motorsport, Project 3? Wait. Oh, Forza Horizons 3, I'm sorry. And also, you know, I got Dirt Showdown for the 360 as a free download. You know, and it's backwards compatible. So I'm going to try that a bit, you know, and see if I can get some achievements there. The game I was playing today was strangely addictive, and you know it already, because it's sort of infamous. I started playing, just for the heck of it, because it was free on Xbox Live, Goat Simulator.
Oh, yeah?
And uh-huh. I was genuinely surprised at how deep the thing is. You know, yes, you're just running around and butting things and making things explode, but there's so many secrets to uncover and stuff like that. Like, I shot myself off into space.
Yeah.
I actually forced a gigantic boulder to come down, and I found that it'll destroy cars, and I was able to kill that stupid hillbilly in a field that's going in circles that keeps on hitting you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I just rolled that boulder in front of him, and kablooey, and I got an achievement for it. And the thing is that the best games have very organic achievements. You get achievements because you know if you do this, you're going to get an achievement. You know, you don't have to look at the achievement list. You know that if I do this, this is doing something special, I better get an achievement for it. And boom, yep, you get an achievement for it, you know? So, yeah, I've only stuck in the one area, and I had a lot of gameplay for 2 hours. And I probably, you know, it's one of those games like Quap in which you just, screw it, I'm just going to play a little bit of this for a while. end up playing 2 hours of it and then stopping because you have something else to do. But yeah, I mean, now I understand where the hype is coming from, you know. And with all these open world games that employ physics, it tells you right off the bat, listen, you know what, this is a physics-based game, and if you get stuck, you might as well respawn. You know, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah.
And as with any of these, there's just some really strange stuff that can happen. Like, you use your tongue to lick things, so I decided to lick the hillbilly who's going around in circles, and there I went. I was flying all over the place in the back of this hillbilly thing, just, I recorded the video, I'll probably upload it later. There's a lot of weird stuff that can happen in this game, so.
Mm-hmm.
So have you, either of you played Goat Simulator, or?
No, I've played it in the past.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's the Xbox One version, so at least I got some achievements along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I did not play the game in which you play a pregnant woman who shoots babies out of her cooch and see how far you can get the baby.
Yeah, I thought that was a Facebook game or a mobile game.
No, it was an Xbox Live indie game. I forgot the name of it. Hold on 1 second. Xbox Mute. What the hell? How'd that happen? I didn't tell it to unmute itself. Oh, it's raining? Really? It's not raining in Manhattan. It's raining in the Bronx, but not in Manhattan? Oh, well. Anyways, getting way back on topic, so that's what I've played. So, since we last spoke last week, was there anything else that you saw at E3 that got your attention?
I think,
oh, wait, Scott, I just realized. Scott, they released the demo that I saw of Civ 6, which I'm pretty... I told Dan, you know, they just released the... you don't need me for this week's Polycast, so... Did you watch that? And they also released a bunch of other videos that explained districts and the Americans and all that stuff. Did you watch those? So, yeah. So, the information is starting to spew out about Civ 6.
Oh, yes. There's a really good website, Well of Souls, that likes to... gather up all the information that's currently out there for the games, and they've shown like all the world wonders that are on there. There's a
I don't want to spoil myself. And I just want the gameplay mechanics.
Yeah. What else were they showing? They showed a lot of different stuff, and I think we know a few more of the leaders. Still don't know what the new Civ that's never been in Civ will be. So I'm kind of curious about that.
Antarcticans. You know, here's the thing. So, you saw the districts video. Now that you've seen how they're actually going to work, what do you think?
I still think they're interesting. I'm not really surprised with what happened. They're just it's going to be interesting because you have to think about what you're doing. You just can't spam, you know, improvements everywhere. You have to actually plan. Okay, this is going to be your military city. This will be your production city.
Well, the other thing is that you're going to have to reserve entire hexes for these districts.
Yes.
Also, one thing I should have realized was going to happen is that not only do world wonders take up an entire hex, but you have to have the right kind of hex. Like they said, for pyramids, you need either desert or floodplain in order to build it, or you can't build a pyramid.
Yeah. So. Stonehenge has to be on the grass. Oracle has to be on the hill.
Which is good, you know, because here's the thing. If you're a Civ and you're the only one who's in the desert, or you think you're the only one, you're the only one who's going to be able to build those pyramids. You know, so you can take your time. It's like the big race to get Stonehenge.
Well, you still might want to do it early, depending on what...
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, Stonehenge, because, well, in terms of Civ 5, you get extra religion. We don't know what... Really, what the... Or do we? Do they say what the wonders do?
They had a... I had to bring up the website.
No. Don't bring up the website, but they did explain what each one did, right?
A lot of them, yeah. Some of them didn't have the answers to, but a lot of them they do, yes.
Okay. Because, you know, I mean, like, the pyramids, three workers?
That was Civ 5.
I'm just saying, Civ, you know, the pyramids, you know, so it'll be interesting. I mean... the main reason I got pyramids in the earlier games is, fuck, I can get democracy right now.
Yeah, or granary for every city.
Yeah, but being able to have the advanced government types early in the game.
Back in Civ 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah. So, how about you, TJ?
I'm really digging the Batman stuff that came out of E3.
Oh, yes. And I was right. And I get to brag about it. People said, you know, I said, you know what I would really like? A Batman game that doesn't have a major rogues gallery and instead does someone like Carmine Falcone. You know, it was one of the mob bosses. And they're going to have Carmine Falcone. So that made me happy. You know, and again, they're stressing the fact that it's going to be a lot of Bruce Wayne. You know. So that
that's the Telltale one, right?
Yeah, that's what I don't know if there's any other. Is there another Batman?
Oh yes, there is.
Oh,
they're doing a VR Batman Arkham Detective for the PSVR, and that is from what I've heard going swimmingly. They got Mark Hamill back for Joker in that, and
they have Troy Baker doing Bruce Wayne Batman in the Telltale game. Mm-hmm. And people were upset, well, why isn't it Kevin Conroy? Well, no. Troy Baker's done Batman, I believe, before, and he's actually pretty good.
Do you not know if Conroy is doing it Batman for the VR one, but I know that Mark Hamill's doing Joker, and that's
well,
wonderful.
You know, he has plenty of time to do it, because since his one sole scene in Star Wars Episode 7 was just standing there, easiest money he ever made.
It's true.
I'm just going to stand there for a while we have a helicopter shot.
Hey, that's all he had to do. But
why didn't Leia go, by the way?
Huh?
Why didn't Leia go to meet Luke?
Because it was something that Rey had to do on her own.
Why didn't Leia want to go?
Because Rey told her, no, I'm doing this by myself.
Why didn't Leia say, fuck you, I'm going to do this? Or maybe Leia's afraid that Luke's going to hit on her again.
Because Leia just lost her husband.
So?
She's in mourning.
So shouldn't she be the one to tell Luke that Han is dead?
No, it needs to be Rey. It's
why
Rey's
would it
destiny.
Be Rey?
Because it's Rey's destiny. She believes in the Force, and she's going to let the Force...
Oh, and Leia has no destiny, and she has no Force power, except for the fact that in Return of the Jedi was that, well, if Luke fails, we have a backup.
Yes, so she has Force powers, but she never explored them. She never needed to.
Well, point is nah, because that's the way the movie played out.
It's nah, what's it called? It's that we want to shill this character, you know, instead of this old person whose face can't move.
But anyways, getting back to what I was saying, the detective thing, it's a first-person VR experience, and I hear, from what I've heard from a few of my buddies, it's awesome. It's a really cool...
I don't trust... that kind of, you know, oh, it's real cool, you know, and then when you... I heard the same thing about Red Steel. Oh, it's really cool, man, you use the Wiimote like a sword.
Well, I mean, the people that I've heard it from are people that I trust that have worked in comics for decades upon decades, so...
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know, just a game based on one mechanic.
I mean... That's pretty much what all of Telltale's entire catalog is.
No, those
are
adventure games.
So why are we saying that Batman and Telltale is going to be any different?
Because they're an adventure game. That's an entire genre.
It's a genre based around making choices in QuickTime events.
Yeah, no, not really QuickTime events. I mean, Telltale decided to do that. But, you know... Because, you know, I don't know why they did it. Maybe they thought that they really needed to emulate Heavy Rain. I mean, the first time they ever did that as an entire game was Jurassic Park.
Look, all I'm saying is that Telltale is proof positive that you can take one mechanic and run for it with it for decades.
I guess. Well, not decades. Just when did... when that's like six years ago. It has to be... Because I know that Jurassic Park came late in E3 when I was there and I was watching a demo, so...
Well, I'm going as far back as Sam & Max, too.
Sam & Max didn't have QuickTime events. That was strict point and click. Anyways, that's good. So, what else besides a VR Batman detective game?
Well, Batman VR and Batman Telltale, those are the two...
Have you seen the screenshots for it? The Telltale game?
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, it's not as cartoony as The Walking Dead or as Wolf Among Us, and it's a little bit more natural. With, you know, it's more lifelike while still remaining comic bookish.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. They had one Batman's rogue gallery listed in it, aside from Carmine Falcone, and I'm just trying to remember who it is. I don't think it's Scarecrow. It's Because they announced the voices along with it, and that's how we know that Troy Baker is one of the things. But yeah, I mean, it's Harvey Dent is going to be in it. However, mm-hmm. it's going to be Harvey Dent pre Two-Face, it seems.
Yeah.
So, I get it now. Are we going to have a little courtroom scene in which Carmen Falcone is going to stick in his thing, get out a jar of acid, and give Harvey a little bit of a bath?
Well, isn't the Telltale one sort of going off of, like, post-year one events?
I don't know. They do confirm it's pre-Two-Face Harvey Dent, and it opens on a fundraiser for him.
Yeah.
And according to this, you can portray either Batman as a billionaire playboy or grieving Gorvin bitter at the world. So you're going to be setting up his character, you know, of what kind of Bruce Wayne are you going to play, you know?
That sounds interesting.
I'm not going to do the grieving bitter orphan because it's been done to death and it's boring. I swear, you know, get over it, you know. We're all orphans at one point or another. That's kind of depressing.
Well, I mean, we've had a little... I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Okay.
Pretty much we got to have the billionaire playboy version of Bruce Wayne for most of, oh my God, what is his name? I can't remember off the top of my head. Batman and Batman Returns.
Oh yeah. you're talking about Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. I think that was a good version of the playboy Bruce Wayne.
Well, I also, you know, Mask of the Phantasm did a good job of it as well. You know, and showing him as a playboy who loves him and leaves him, you know, and gets drinks splashed in his face. So, yeah, I mean, I will say this, you know, it's refreshing not to have a game with a Joker in it. Because, you know, I'm tired of the Joker. We get it. He's Batman's main rival. But not every Superman game has Lex Luthor. You know, well, actually, there are no Superman games, so scratch it.
There is a Superman game, and it's the worst game ever.
No, there's several of them. I mean, I have the Atari 2600 Superman for one.
You have the Superman 64 Superman?
No. And Lex Luthor's in that one. But anyways, if anybody could do a Superman game, it would be Telltale. You wouldn't have to worry about play balancing or anything like that with Superman's powers. You know what I'd like to see? A Superman on War World game with Mongul, that entire thing. Where he's on even space with everybody else because it has a red sun. You know,
I think if anyone could do it, it would be so they've played around with the idea for a while already, Insomniac Games, but they're already doing the Spider-Man game, which, I mean, they have experience with Infamous and making a character that you just gradually raise and raise and raise until they're pretty much an unstoppable force. The problem with Superman is that he's already an unstoppable force, so where do you start from?
It's easy to do. Though. I mean, for one thing, have him, what's it called, you know, there are plenty of stories in which Superman has been brought down to normal.
I think the whole point of Superman is that you go on his moral compass. I mean, yeah, he has all these powers, but what does he do with
Yeah, but powers? You're not going to have a game in which Superman is killing people, so you don't have that, you don't get to explore that moral compass. It's a different thing. It's more of how many people get hurt because of Superman. And one game tried to do that, in which instead of Superman getting hurt, it was the city with a life bar.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work. So, I think you have to go with an adventure game, because then you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's all decisions that you have to make Superman take, you know. Hmm. Who do I save? And one power that Superman does not have is that he can't be everywhere at once. And that's his biggest problem.
Yeah. That's why he formed the Justice League.
Yes. And that's why he stays out of Gotham. Although, if you read Batman Rebirth, you know, you have Gotham and Gotham Girl, who have seem to be Superman with a Gotham outfit.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I've been paying a lot of attention to DC Rebirth, and I'm liking what I see in a big way. Action Comics number 958 is very strong. Spoiler for all these reading. Well, actually, this is not. You don't have to do a spoiler. This is speculation. Everybody thinks that Mr. Oz is Ozymandias.
Because they were talking about now that Watchmen is canon to the DC universe.
Yeah, well, he was also in front of a big bank of monitors, which I think Ozymandias did as well. And at the end of the comic, he's saying, you know, Superman, you have to make this moral choice, and what you do is gonna have an influence of my decision. So, you know, if he does self-sacrifice and all that stuff, he'll be able to prove to Dr. Manhattan, hey, look, they're not downbeat and depressed in realism here. There is heroism in this universe. Give them their 10 years back.
What do you suppose the odds are that making a Watchmen canon to the DC universe is just a long con to get Dr. Manhattan versus Superman in some arc?
They already have Captain Atom. There's not going to be like the Anti-Monitor in which the problem's going to be solved with a punch.
I think that's too close to Superman 4, where he was fighting Nuclear Man.
Jeff Johns is actually Jeff Johns has taken over DC films, comics films as well. And they made Ben Affleck the executive producer on the next Justice League movie, which is basically telling Zack Snyder, you know, you're not making decisions anymore.
Yeah.
Because after they found out, some of the things that Zack Snyder said when he was making The Watchmen was, you know, I really like it because you have people having sex and killing, and I think it's really cool. And then killing Jimmy Olsen in Batman vs. Superman as an Easter egg, because they think it would be fun to kill Jimmy Olsen. And then reveal it later on. The guy is a wackadoo. he's single-handedly bringing down the DCU. And one of the things about DC Rebirth, before we get into actual video game discussion, is the fact that, you know, people took the wrong messages from Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns, in which they thought it was because they were gritty and dark, and that's why they were good. No, they were just well-written. And the thing is, they missed the entire point of Watchmen. Watchmen is saying, we need, you know, happier heroes, because look what happens when they're gritty and dark. They become this crap. You know, they become evil, and they decided to summon giant tentacle Cthulhu monsters to kill millions of people just to prevent world war, you know. This is a world without hope. You know, the DC universe is supposed to be a world with hope.
Yeah.
So.
I read somewhere that they're making a movie of the Irredeemable comic series.
I wouldn't mind that. I mean, Mark Waid is a really good writer, and he did a very interesting thing. He took the origin of Superman from the literal, and they borrowed some of it in Man of Steel. You know, and you have Irredeemable. You also have Incorruptible, which is the companion book, which goes around Max Damage, who is the Lex Luthor of the thing. So you have a superhero becoming a villain, although Plutonian was always a villain. He just never really expressed it, you know, because he could not retaliate against bullies because he would kill them if he did.
Right.
You know, and that just built up and built up. And then we find out, spoiler, he's not an alien. He's the offspring of some gigantic space entity. So, you know.
He's offspring of space alien that probably still makes him an alien.
So, anyways, but you remember all that stuff about Clark not being able to control his X-ray vision and all that stuff and Man of Steel and all that stuff. That was from Mark Waid's Superman book, and then they used it for Man of Steel. He also used that for Irredeemable as well. Surprised they're making an Irredeemable book. You know,
I really actually hope they never make the Irredeemable movie, or at least that we have time pass until they do it. Because if they do it, it's just the same thing as Watchmen, if you ask me.
Here's the thing though. It would make for a better series, because everything is a slow burn in that book. You know, Max Damage learning to become a hero, you know, and the rest of the world having to deal with Irredeemable. I mean, Plutonian deciding to say, fuck that, I'm going to just take shit apart now.
If you're having characters go beyond that, past that event horizon, you're just going to make people disinterested in the series.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not that. It's more of, it's more of a story of Max Damage. Because he's the one who is the Lex Luthor of the world, and he's starting to realize that he could be a good person. So I was thinking of sort of like Megamind with Plutonian in the role of Titan.
You're saying that's the point of Irredeemable?
That's the point of Incorruptible, but it has something to do with Irredeemable, though.
Because Irredeemable is pretty much opposite. The irony of Irredeemable is that it's about him finally being redeemed in the end. Spoiler.
Well, I already said he was a big space alien. I mean, a cosmic being. Anyways. Mm-hmm. So, Anyways, Brexit happened, and that's going to be the first of our news items. TIGA calls for government to reassure UK games industry, and this comes from some games industry biz. The Independent Games Developer Association, aka TIGA, has weighed in on the issues of Brexit and the effects of leaving the EU on the British games industry, warning that the government must ensure that it remains committed to keeping domestic development competitive in the wider global market. In a statement issued this morning, and this is today's news, by the way, CEO Richard Wilson identified four key issues which are likely to have an impact on how Britain's industry will fare over the coming months and years. Access to finance will be a key issue, as the depressed and uncertain economy makes for a nervous investment climate. The video games tax relief and R&D tax relief must be preserved. That's one of the things about England, was that they really, in past years, have really backed their video games with a huge grant for them, just like Canada does, which is why a lot of our companies are opening up shop in Canada, you know, in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, you know. And even strengthened post-Brexit, access to talent is likely to become even more difficult as EU workers are either prevented from joining the UK companies or decide to work within EU borders instead. And IP protection will need significant reinforcement, as much as the UK's legislation is tied to EU membership. Dr. Wilson, it's the UK video games industry is a high technology sector that provides high skilled employment for 30,000 people, including approximately 11,000 development staff, and in contributes £1.1 billion to the UK GDP. It is also export oriented, with at least 95% of studios exporting. Read as United States. and in other countries, but mostly United States. Following the referendum in favor of Brexit, it will be more vital than ever to strengthen and avoid harming those sectors where the UK has a comparative competitive advantage. For example, aerospace, defense, high-value manufacturing, blah, 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 blah. For the industry, video games industry, it is particularly important that the policymakers ensure that video games... he's repeating himself, isn't he? So, yeah. So the 85% white British... mostly from the country where there are sheep farmers, decided that they wanted to leave the European Union without realizing that is basically cutting yourself off at the knees, because of EU passporting. And what that is, for those of you who don't understand, is that banks in the European Union can freely trade with each other, you know, without any problem. But when you cut yourself off from that, then you can't do business with them. Now, as of this speaking, a petition for, I think it's now 3 million people saying we want us to do that vote over again, because the British pound has dropped from 1.5 to 1.35 and still falling, and the worst is yet to happen. And the thing is that even dogs don't like it, and, you know, it isn't going to take effect for another 2 years. And the problem with Britain is that the other EU countries are starting to take a hard line and say, hey, you know what? You know, you want out, you're out. We're not going to cut any deals with you. There's not going to be relaxation with this. Scotland wants out because they're very connected to EU. So they want independence so that they can remain in the EU. You know, and Northern Ireland is taking advantage of this because they don't want to be a part of Britain anyway. So we have a big mess, but we're going to talk about gamers, video game developers, and I know a lot of video game developers were saying that this could bankrupt them immediately. You know, this could just push them out of the business altogether if, what's it called, the result of this vote.
Move to a new place, new location?
That's easier said than done for some people. I mean, the big industries, like...
Here's the thing. If you are a global industry, then the Brexit is a real big problem for you. And video games are very much a global industry.
What I mean is, like, the big industries, anyone, like, massive studios, like, I think Team 17 is located over there.
I think so. I think they're in Scotland, actually.
Those people will probably be okay because they have the resources to move, but indie developers or anyone that's not like a super massive conglomerate of multiple studios is in a lot of trouble.
Well, Team 17 isn't that big. You know, they've just started dabbling in publication. I actually spoke to Team 17, and you know, they're not that big. And it was at E3, and you know, the Brexit vote hadn't started. They're in West Yorkshire, so they're not in Scotland. By the way, a little note, and this is way off the thing. I'll say it after this article. So, Scott?
Yeah, I'm not sure what other studios are in UK. I remember there was a game...
Well, it's not Lionhead anymore, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, Lionhead. That's the only one I could think of.
Rare is still in the UK.
That's okay. Yeah, I know this is going to have a huge effect on them, and as far as the video games are concerned...
Well, the big problem is that US-based and other people who happen to have studios in the UK, you're just going to pull right out. That's what the banks are doing, you know, a lot of major banks are having these plans to get ready to move to Frankfurt or Paris or, you know, someplace, you know, and they're taking the jobs with them, you know.
Oh, that's right, Tyco's in Cork, I forgot about that, that's my company.
So, yeah, they're pulling out, and, you know, and I'm, you know, this is a highly volatile subject, you know, Brexit, but... It's shooting your face despite your shooting your nose despite your face, and it's they think they've had bad. It's going to get worse. See, that's the scary part, and we're getting affected by it as well. I mean, everybody's getting affected by this. I mean, our stocks opened up 550 points down.
What's really sad is there was a skit of I think on Blunt Talk with.
You talking about John Oliver? I mean, John Oliver did this entire story.
Patrick Stewart.
Oh.
Patrick Stewart did a skit, like, months before this, talking about doing, like, a routine where he's this right-wing, or actually Tory, political person saying, like, oh, we England needs to be for England and not be in the EU, or what has it done for us? And all his advisors go on and on telling him all the things that this organization, you know, being in this group has done and how it's helped. And in the end, didn't we found the EU? You know, it's like, It was really funny, and here we are now, you know, watching this actual come to pass.
Like I said, it's getting worse. You know, and the thing is that also the people behind it, the Brexiters, I forgot the name of this organization, I don't care. They're basically the UK version of the Tea Party. Basically lied, saying they would get back 315 pounds. And he said it right on, well, actually, you know, but it was on your fly. Well, it wasn't off fly. It was, you know, some people, yeah, like he's divorcing himself from the fact that, oh, it was another group, you know, no true Scotsman, you know, it was another group. And the thing is that you'd figure that someone shooting and killing one of the leaders, you know, say, what's it called, supporting Brexit and saying it all, you know, what's it called, calling out the group's slogan might have given the people of England a clue, although I will say this, you know, it was London who said, please keep us in because we have jobs there and we have everything there, and Scotland, which actually has business there, and the Northern Ireland, which has business there. Basically, the people who voted for Brexit were old people and people who did not graduate, who did not go to college, and people who were sheep farmers, you know, just lived in the middle of England, you know, and didn't quite understand global politics, because here's the thing. This is not 1910. You can't just say, oh, we're not going to be a part of this.
Yeah, and apparently Google said that, like...
You know, that's actually misleading, because I'm willing to bet you that the people in England who are Googling, what is the EU, what is it... Those are school kids who are wondering what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Why is all this stuff happening? You know, I will say this, though. That guy who appeared on a talk show said, well, I didn't know my vote would count. Huh? Yeah. Hello? That's what voting is. Your votes do count. They're not going to say, oh, well, you know, we're not going to... You don't... See, that's one thing, you know, I'm going to say. I'm not going to prefer a political party in this country, but I'm going to say, if you're going to vote, don't vote because you think it's funny. Because that vote is going to count.
Yeah.
Your votes count. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Which is, this is why we close all the bars in the United States on election day. The bars are closed for a reason. We don't want drunk people voting.
I'll tell you this, a few of I'm looking at a list right now and I'm like a little nervous about some of these because, okay, off the top of it, Chucklefish is located over there, who, you should know who that is, Scott.
Yep. No, I don't.
Stardew Valley.
Oh, damn.
Chucklefish is just one person, though.
Yeah.
Games Workshop is located over there. They're proprietors of a little-known franchise known as Warhammer.
Wow.
Playtonic, which was with Team 17, they're the ones that are working on that ukulele, which is sort of the spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, and Team 17 is publishing it. I will say this, though. I spoke to a representative of Team 17 about ukulele, and I said, you know what you guys should do? You guys should get together with Microsoft and maybe have, you know, like a DLC that sort of is like a crossover between ukulele and Banjo-Kazooie and all that stuff. And he said, basically, we can't really talk about this right now, which tells me, yeah, there's probably going to be DLC for ukulele that takes you into the world, probably just for Xbox, because Microsoft owns the license, that teams you up with Banjo-Kazooie, which would be ultra cool. You're playing ukulele, all of a sudden, you're playing with Banjo and Kazooie as well, next to you. So yeah. That would be ultra cool. Phil Harrison talked about it, and he said that the next 2 years will rewrite substantial amounts of trade and employment legislation for the UK, and it's unclear. So here's the thing, is that they're really trying to scramble, because they don't know if they're going to be allowed to... So here's the thing about the Brexit vote, it's non-binding. You know, they could just say, screw it, we wanted your opinion, we said no, thank you. You know, which would be quote unquote a tremendous breach of faith. But considering the vote was 51%, and if a lot of people didn't know what the hell they were voting for, and they thought they were, oh, we're voting for British independence. No, you're not. You have independence. Mm-hmm. You already have independence. This is economic. This is an economic deal that you're backing out of, and you know, just play Civilization 5 and see how well you do if you don't have any trade agreements. So,
yeah. I don't know. There's quite a few on here that I'm a little nervous about.
Yeah. And Dreams is another British company, and what the hell did they do? I forgot.
Playground Games makes.
They did the Sunwing Gunner. You also have Positec Games, which does Democracy 3 and Gratuitous Space Battles.
Playground Games does Forza Horizon.
See, but they're Microsoft, and Microsoft will just say, hey, guys, coming over here, we're taking you out of the UK.
There are definitely those ones that they'll probably be fine, but then there's stuff like...
Oh, you have Big Robot who did Sir, You're Being Hunted, who are in trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, I forgot, almost, an obvious one, Mojang.
They're in, aren't they in the Netherlands?
Oh, it's possible. But Mojang has a lot of people in the UK. I'm pretty sure of it.
Yeah, I think most of them are
Swedish.
Well, I know,
not Netherlands, Sweden.
I know Nathan Dinnerbone, but I thought he'd left Mojang.
Well, again, Mojang, even if they were in the UK, they're now part of Microsoft. So Microsoft said, hey, come over here.
Yeah,
they're in Sweden.
Fine.
But, you know, I'm just saying, you know, the people who belong to the big companies, you know, Rare and, you know, and Microsoft, who belong to Microsoft, Sony... You know, I don't know if Nintendo has any. I don't think Nintendo has anybody in the UK. But anyways, the big companies are just going to. Activision, definitely. Activision has their UK division. Electronic Arts has their UK division. I don't know if Ubisoft. I think they may just reside in France. But all they're going to do is say, "Hey guys, you're going to come over here." You know.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem for the UK is that they're going to have a very hard problem getting developers to come to them, which is why they have these grants, you know, for video game developers. They're trying to get people to come there, you know, they can't, and the funniest thing is they don't want immigrants, but the thing is that most of the immigrants that have been coming into that country are from Africa and from the Middle East, which are completely not, they're going to come anyway, because they're not even part of the EU.
I was reading a lot of tweets about people from Poland and Romania being told to go home. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, their money works too, you know. And they may, you know, here's the thing, you know, they don't want an immigration. Well, they may become so poor that immigrants won't want to come there.
Yeah.
You know. So, anyway, this has been the video game Politicast.
Yep.
So,
this is depressing. Let's move on to something happy.
Yeah, Scott. Actually, I don't know if this is depressing or not. This might be a little bit. Scott, go ahead with this one. Next one.
Mario Maker fans have built a better community website than Nintendo. This is from Kotaku, and I am not surprised by this, but we've changed. Though Nintendo's Mario Maker website makes it easier to find cool levels, it remains woefully incomplete. What a shock. Where's the ability to make playlists, search the titles by name? Thankfully, fans are filling in the blanks, as usual. Makers of Mario, a collaborative between several members of Mario Maker community, launched into open beta today. Though a number of features are still in development, Makers of Mario is already compelling because it gives players the chance to build worlds, aka playlists, even though proper Mario games are structured as a series of thematically connected worlds, Mario Maker has no such options. Right now, there are playlist worlds for one-screen puzzles, the Kaizo stages that were played, most recent Awesome Games Done Quick speedrunning event, and many more. I could collect the stages I've been playing on my Mario Maker morning series on YouTube, for example. The site currently works by handing over the browser cookie that generated by Nintendo's own Mario Maker website. Unless something changes, it seems like Nintendo is done supporting Mario Maker. There hasn't been a significant DLC additions in months, and the whole reason Makers of Mario exist is because Nintendo hasn't touched their website. Chances are we're going to be waiting for Mario Maker 2 before anything substantial hits. In the meantime, fans are stepping up. Now, I'm concerned if Nintendo's going to step in and tell them to stop it.
Yeah.
That would be a Nintendo move.
That would be a Nintendo move. But on the other hand, I'm wondering, they're not actually creating content. They're just facilitating content. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So
yeah, but
I'm not surprised at all that fan. I mean, this is almost like just typical behavior. Is, you know, a company makes something, sometimes a little half-assed, and then the community steps in with mods and websites and all this other stuff to just kind of like make it better, you know. And it just seems to happen a lot.
And this isn't a fan site, really, because when I say fan site, I mean, you know, oh, look, I'm making a Pikachu page. I'm going to have all these pictures of Pikachu there from DeviantArt and all that stuff. This is actually a utility. And they probably have to show what the levels look like, but I'm pretty sure they're doing it so that when you look it on the face, all you really see are words, you know, this level name, number of things, you know, on what's included in it. But no picture of the level itself unless you click in or something. Or maybe a small thumbnail. You know, nothing that's going to get the Nintendo legal machine rumbling.
Yeah.
So they just keep it as bare bones as possible so it doesn't look anything like something that Nintendo would license. I haven't seen the site, so for those of you out there who have actually seen the Makers of Mario site, let us know what it looks like.
It's the Tengen of Mario Maker websites.
Well, Tengen, by the way, remember, was Atari.
Yeah. But, so. I don't even think... Yeah, clearly Nintendo didn't expect Mario Maker to come this far, which is ridiculous because they gave everybody all the resources they need to make anything they want.
Here's the thing. A year ago at E3, Mario Maker was their big E3 presentation on the floor.
Yeah.
Aside from a bunch of 3DS stuff, this is just a year later. 1 year later, and they've given up? Really?
Because they have the Zelda and the NX to worry about.
They don't seem to understand the concept of a sandbox and how, like, just how much life you can get out of something like that. I mean, did they not learn from Minecraft? They could have made a Zelda Maker. I would have bought the hell out of that.
I don't know about a Zelda Maker, but I'm just saying about strictly Mario. Mario Maker, you know, content, you know, or at least facility. You know, here's the thing. Here's a crazy idea. Do what Bethesda's doing and allow people to create their own content and upload it. You know, I mean, actual content. You know, like, I don't know, like make a Goomba with two heads. I don't care. It's just anything that's different, you know. But, you know, it's like fire and forget.
Does Mojang have a way of making money off of Minecraft after you bought it?
Yeah, there's DLC.
Okay,
so lots of DLC for the Xbox and PlayStation 4.
And also, you know, the skins as well. Microsoft.
Yeah.
One of the things that Microsoft was big on doing was skins.
Packs. They're going to sell resource packs on the Xbox next.
Yeah, so that makes absolutely no sense why Nintendo wouldn't jump on that same bandwagon and be like, because I guarantee you the reason why they're probably not supporting it is that for whatever reason they didn't think that they could make more money off of it after people had bought it.
Okay, here's the thing. You know what Microsoft did when they bought Mojang? What they said? Okay, you do what you're doing and make us money. That's all they said. We're not, you know, obviously Microsoft has some input, like, we want to do this, you know. But basically they told Mojang to just do what they do, you know. And they didn't do something stupid like, sorry, Sony consoles, You can't have Minecraft anymore. No, they said, screw it. You may not get some of our premium stuff, you know, the really, you know, but you're going to get all the DLC and you're going to get all this stuff, you know. And, you know, like I said, it's a moneymaker. Mario Maker could be a moneymaker if they allow it to be.
Yeah, if they allowed it to be.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on to another Nintendo item. Go ahead, TJ.
Nintendo's upcoming NX console may use cartridges instead of discs.
Now, time out for a moment. We did discuss this a couple of months ago, and now this is starting to rile up again, so this is not like we forgot about it.
This is just new news. Is this still a rumor?
Still a rumor, but okay. But from a new source.
From Extreme Tech. Optical discs have ruled console game distribution for decades.
Well, two decades. 1995-ish, I would say.
Yeah. But recent trademark filings from Nintendo and a memory supplier report from earlier this year suggest that the company may be shaking things up with the NX console. NX is rumored to be adopting cartridges instead of discs for its upcoming platform, which is currently expected to launch at the end of Nintendo's first fiscal quarter in 2017.
So that would be November 2017 to April 2018, if I remember correctly.
The most recent rumor comes courtesy of Nintendo's trademark applications for The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. As you can see...
The filing below has this on it.
The filing has video game cartridges listed as one of the goods and services Nintendo wishes to trademark, as the Neo Gaff poster explains. However, applications from other titles don't typically mention game cartridges unless the game is also a 3DS title. Taken by itself, this is a weak thread to hang a conclusion from. Earlier this spring, however, memory manufacturer Macronix announced that it is expected to provide chips for the upcoming NX console. Macronix seemed to also imply that it would see a boost in its NOR flash business from doing so. So, though it's not clear if NOR memory is available in
sufficient densities.
Nintendo may be Nintendo might bring back cartridges as a way of compensating for the low optical drive performance. 20 years ago, when the N64 launched, Nintendo took heat for opting to use cartridge-based format rather than a CD-ROM. While the N64's load times were far better than anything on the PlayStation, game graphics often suffered as a result of the limited storage space available on N64 cartridges. Games ranged from 4 to 64 megabytes, while the PlayStation could store hundreds of megabytes of data on one disc. Cost will be the major question here. If Macronix can deliver faster NOR flash at an equivalent price to Blu-ray, the reduced storage capacity, 32 gigabytes for the NX, supposedly compared to the around 50 gigabytes for the modern Xbox One or PS4 titles, will be a minimal issue. If Nintendo can't get the price at once, however, it may still end up paying higher costs per bit and having to recommend game developers scale things back to compensate.
I'm pretty sure that they're making a 3DS version of Breath of Wind, really. I think that's what it... And here's the thing, though. Nintendo might do is what they did with the Wii U, or was it the Wii? I don't know. They allowed you to use SD cards as storage, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's correct.
So maybe they're going to make proprietary storage as instead of a hard drive, so you just carry around these things as your save data, you know. Because I find it hard to believe that Nintendo would go backwards. I mean, going forwards is digital, you know, and that's the fastest of them all, really. Maybe not.
Well, the cartridges still seem to work okay for 3DS platform, but they need to really get with it. They really seem to be backwards. They don't understand the sandbox concept with the Mario Maker and DLC stuff, and they don't seem to really get, you know, just putting all of their digital stuff on the 3DS, let alone whatever they're doing with the NX.
On the other hand, if the NX decided to go, hey, we're going to use cartridges instead of discs, you know, if you can get a 32 gigabyte cart, you know, it's fine. I mean, the Blu-ray is what, 9 gigabytes? Or if you dual density it, it's 18 gigabytes, you know? I mean, it still doesn't help with stuff, you know, well, you can compress a game and then store it on the hard drive. That's what they're doing now. you know, I mean, you have 50 gigabyte downloads. So, I don't know. It just, a lot of people are really in favor of this idea. Because like the thing says, when you have a ROM, an actual ROM, it's instantaneous because you're basically adding a motherboard to your game. That's what cartridges are, kids. They're just motherboards that you plug in to your console, you know?
Right.
So it's infinitely faster. And like I said, if it's 32 gigabytes, it's not that bad. I mean, you can get a 32 gigabyte SD card for what, $10 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
But then you have the proprietary, you know, just so long as they're not expensive. Here's the thing. The one thing that was bad about cartridges is that molded plastic is expensive to make.
Right.
As well as circuit boards. That's why, you know how much it's carbon. That's what discs are. They're carbon. They're pennies. You can snap them in half and get a new one for pennies. That's why they're so popular as optical media. And of course, digital is even cheaper because there is nothing there, you know. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think? If the NX decides, hey, we're going to go with cartridges, you know, you think that's a plus or a minus, really?
I would be fine with it. I don't need to. I mean, like I've already expressed that my gamings don't need to be the best disc graphics in the world. They don't need to be 3D. They don't need to have voice. You know, I'm fine with 2D stuff. I mean, it's like Symphony and Night, I'm sure, could fit on a cartridge just fine. Like,
well, 32 gigabytes, you could fit a lot of shit on that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, you know, for me, I'd be okay with it.
How about you, TJ?
And never to have a load screen again? That would be awesome.
It'll depend. Like, with the N64, it came to a problem of limitations.
Also, blowing on the cartridge to clean it.
Yeah, but when you reach that limitation, there's not much more you can do about it.
Yeah.
And
well, if it has a hard drive, then it's less of a problem. You know, like I said, I think it's going to be so you could have storage of your own. Which is always nice. I think we're burying the lead, though, because it seems like you're going to have Zelda Breath of Wind coming to 3DS.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that bigger news, really? I mean, and if they do, is it going to be the same game, or is it going to be something a little different?
That'll be interesting, because that looks a lot better than what I graphically see on 3DS typically.
Well, you could always scale down the graphics.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, that's not entirely true. I mean, look at Super Smash Bros. 4. Super Smash Bros. 4 was released on the 3DS before it was released on the Wii U. And it's almost entirely visually the same game.
Well, it depends on how big the world is going to be, though, for Breath of Wind, you know, because the world is supposed to be massive.
Right.
I'm hearing it's 9 times bigger than Skyrim, supposedly.
Well, you're not going to have the same kind of, you know, graphic taxation that Skyrim has, but still, you know, it's a lot of exploration.
My point is that they were able to do that with Smash Brothers, and I don't know if they'll be able to do that with the Breath of the Wild. You're right, but it's possible. It's possible that they could figure out a way around that and figure out how to store most of the game's data onto the 3DS.
Or maybe they can make a companion game.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's another thing. Maybe they can make a different version of Breath of Wind. And here's the thing. Imagine if that 3DS version of Breath of Wind that you have allows you to import certain stuff into the NX version. You know, sort of give you bonus content for having both.
Yeah, there was
that's what they did with Smash Brothers.
There was a Final Fantasy companion thing, too, where you could, so you were supposed to be able to play the Chocobo, and you could go around hunting stuff, and then when you went back to the Final Fantasy game, you would get all the stuff that your little Chocobo buddy went and got on the little portable thing that they had.
So we'll see. Like I said, you know, the NX is going to be very interesting because, you know, Microsoft already said, hey, Xbox S and Xbox One S and Project Scorpio and PlayStation and Sony, you know, I wonder if Microsoft scared Sony from showing off the Neo. It's entirely possible because Microsoft was sure that Sony was going to show off the Neo. And could you imagine them? Microsoft says, we have 6 teraflops. And then Sony says, we have 1.5? You know, so it's sort of like, oh, and we're going to also, and it's Microsoft says, we're going to have the Oculus and the Vive on the Project Scorpio. And Sony's like, oh, we're going to have PlayStation VR, you know. So I think they may have scared them off, and instead Sony said, why are they showing off two consoles? You know, here's a big question, by the way, on that. How much do you think the Project Scorpion is going to be anyway?
That's a good question.
And I think it's going to be somewhere between 500 and 600.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
Which is why it was very smart for them to come out with the Xbox One S, because you get your 4K stuff. You don't get 4K gaming, but you still get 4K video output. You know, which is important to me, at least, because I have a 4K TV. I'm telling you, you know, $500 4K TV, 40-inch. Just go get it at I think it's at Newegg or Tiger Direct, you know?
Yeah.
Join the 4K revolution. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Gears of War 4 on Xbox One will push performance using DirectX 12. PC will have 4K and unlocked FPS frames per second. This comes from TechFrag. The Coalition's technical director, Mike Rayner, recently spoke about the technical details regarding the upcoming Gears of War on Xbox One and Microsoft Windows 10. According to Rayner, the Coalition... And by the way, the Coalition is the group that came over from Epic Games, because Microsoft outright bought Gears of War a license from Epic. So now it's, you know, it's no longer a third-party game, it's a first-party game. Although, technically, I guess you could call it a second-party game, really, yeah. The first Gears of War game. He confirmed that the studio is using Direct 12 API to get the best visuals and optimal performance of the PC version. It'll allow developers to push even farther when it comes to frames per second and visual fidelity. He also confirmed that Gears of War will support 4K resolution on PC, provided your PC can handle it, and it'll do 1080p on the Xbox One. The game is cross-play and cross-buy for both Microsoft Windows 10 and Xbox One as part of the Play Anywhere program. It is reported that the game will target 30 frames per second during the single-player campaign on the Xbox One and 60 frames per second on the multiplayer using dynamic resolution. The PC version, however, will have up to 4K resolution and unlocked frames per second, which means you can go as fast as you can get it with your thing. Gears of War 4 is coming out on October 11th. So, like I said, gotta love Play Anywhere. Play Anywhere. I mean, you get the PC version, you get the Xbox One version, you get the Xbox. You know, and cross-play is very intriguing to me, by the way. You know, I mean, the last time I did a cross-play game, it was friggin' Shadowrun. Remember that game? The Xbox 360? No, it was Xbox One? Wait, was Shadowrun the Xbox?
Shadowrun was on SNES.
No. I'm talking about that shooter, the third-person shooter that was cross-platform between PC and I think it was the Xbox 360. Yeah.
Good lord, wasn't that one horrible though?
No, it was actually pretty good. The problem was the perception. It wasn't really Shadowrun, and it wasn't. Uh-huh. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And you know, I know. Gears. The problem with Gears of War is that I played the first Gears of War, liked it, played the second Gears of War, never finished it, and I never got another Gears of War game again. Because I guess I just... you know, sorry, Marcus, I'm more into Master Chief.
I played from the first game up to the third game and finished it.
Never played Judgment?
No, I didn't play Judgment because I've never really liked Bard as a character, and I wasn't into the idea of going back in the prequel at the time.
Mm. Well, you know, Gears of War 4 is going to have a very much older Marcus Fenix.
Yeah, but I would have to get I suppose I could just get it on my PC, but
you'll get achievements.
Yeah, this will be the first time that Gears of War 4 has come out on PC simultaneously with Xbox One.
Well, let's see, they only released Gears of War 1, and I have it right there, and it was Windows Live, so I got achievements for that. You know, I got achievements for the PC version and the... and I got achievements for the PC and the Xbox 360 version of both games.
I'm kind of shocked that they haven't released Gears of War 2, 3, or Judgment on PC.
Well, they have the collection, and I'm willing to bet you anything that the day that Gears of War 4 comes out, they're going to have a PC remastered version of the Gears of War collection.
Yeah. That would make sense, because Gears of War 4 is the first time that the series has actually landed on PC on release day, as far as they're planning.
Yeah. And watch, I wonder if they'll make the Gears of War collection Play Anywhere, so that if you have an Xbox One, you already have it on PC.
Cool. That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Microsoft wants to get the PC gamers back, you know. And one of the things they're doing is they're just making PC owners out of Xbox One owners. So, anyways, we do have listener feedback, and this is from Donovan. I am anticipating the new South Park game. Yes, the Fractured Butthole. So yeah. I know that you're really into that, TJ.
I'm actually thinking about it as well, but I'm probably... I don't know if I want to pre-order it. I think yes. I might...
Trey Parker and Mastodon has everybody thinking about Fractured Buttholes.
Yeah.
Well, the really cool thing is that Obsidian decided that they were going to go ahead and release the Stick of Truth if you pre-ordered the Fractured Butthole.
I already have and Stick of Truth, though.
That's awesome, because I don't have Stick of Truth. I passed it over. But
really?
It'll be a good chance for people that didn't have it to go back and get a feel of what that was about.
I haven't. I never finished it.
Stick of Truth was really good.
Like, yeah, I've never played it. I've watched videos of it, but I've never played it myself.
Yeah. The Secret Truth was actually kind of... It was more intelligent than it let on, you know. And it was being a parody of RPGs, you know. And this upcoming one is going to be a parody of superheroes. And, you know, it wasn't the South Park that irritates me on TV. It was more of the South Park from the first season, which wasn't... Flanderized, you know, which wasn't, you know, up to 11 when it was still a show.
Mm-hmm.
And not an excuse to try and shock people. You know, it was the show in which a gigantic satellite dish came out of Eric Cartman's ass.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah. And it wasn't evil, 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 I'm going to kill your parents and feed them to you, Eric Cartman, either. It was the befuddled Eric Cartman who thought that if all you did was eat muscle weight gain powder, you'd become muscular. Not realizing it's just going to make you really, really fat. So, yeah, I mean, it's fine. And you also get to fart people to death, or at least knock them out with your farts.
I've liked their commentary even into this last season that just came out.
Yeah, I do like their commentary.
I just got bored with it. I got bored with The Simpsons. I never really connected with Family Guy. I want more of The Critic. I want more Critic. Where's The Critic? With John Lovitz. That's what I want.
Would be nice if that came back, but I don't know.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you have any feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum. Or send your comments to fans at GamingPodcast.net or just post the comments in the site itself. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. The loot swag giveaway is still going on. And basically, just write in the comments what your favorite game from E3 is, and we'll just leave it at that. And,
All right.
You know, it's a lot of good stuff, and if you want that coin, that sweet, sweet gold coin with the code on it, which a lot of people want, and, you know, if I was smart, I would eBayed it for $100, but I'm not doing that. I'm giving it away. So, oh, yeah, you also have to live in the United States, too, because I'm not paying for the friggin' international shipping. Sorry. But that's the way it is. I can't afford international shipping. So, anyways, we will see you next week, and hopefully, we'll have less depressing news items.
Yeah.
And we will Brexit this podcast right now.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take it easy.
And that, as they say, is.